The topic is speaking truth to power, which is one of the classic jobs in the religious tradition and in the prophetic tradition. And one of the jobs that the religious have, that the people who have a sense of ethics and a sense of morality have, is to state their truths in the public marketplace. And that includes our churches, our temples, our mosques, our ashrams, and any place that we gather. This issue comes up today because of what the IRS is doing in Pasadena to the All Souls congregation, looking at their tax-exempt status and questioning it. This is a kind of intimidation and harassment, in my view, up with which we should not put. All right, those are Churchill's phrases, but it's my view. It is an affront to free speech of all kinds. And what was their sin? What was their error? A guest minister, not even their own wholly owned clergy, did a sermon that seemed to be critical of the domestic and foreign policy priorities of the government of the United States. And for that, they're having their tax-exempt status questioned. How shall we be safe and bland enough not to annoy anyone, not to say anything, not to cross over a line from what is spiritual into what is practical? Religion at its best is not simply an abstract theology, a set of principles about a divinity. It is not simply our hymns or what we believe comes after life. Religion at its best is how we treat each other while we are alive. It is how we care for the hungry, how we clothe the naked, how we plead for the widow and orphan, how we free the captive. Those are all political acts. And just picking up the Bible, Hebrew scriptures, the Gospels, picking up a Quran and reading at random, you're going to find legislation. You're going to find prescriptions for how we should deal with what we have and what we own and what the social contract is. How shall we live with one another? And we are immediately into the area of what some regime would call, you've crossed the line. You're talking politics now. We're going to go after your tax-exempt status. And I want to be fair about this. It plays both ways. That during the Carter administration, the Moral Majority, which was founded as a 501c3 tax-exempt corporation, also got its tax-exempt status pulled for getting into politics. It shouldn't be about whose ox is being gored. It shouldn't be up to some bureaucrat sitting in an office saying, you know, I don't like those liberals out there in Pasadena. Wow, there are liberals in Pasadena. Okay. I don't like those liberals in Pasadena, and even liberals in Pasadena who aren't in one of our two Unitarian churches in Pasadena. There must be a lot of liberals in Pasadena that I don't run into. It should not be up to some bureaucrat saying, you know, that sermon passed the line. That announcement passed the line, crossed the line, and got into politics. Those brochures out on the table, they crossed the line. Leslie wearing a Doug Snyder for school board crosses the line. We're going to all lose our tax-exempt status if Lou wearing a Doug Snyder for school board crosses the line. My reading the two Doug Snyder signs clearly crosses the line because there might be an implied endorsement. This is crazy making. This is crazy making. Tax law is very interesting stuff if you're really perverse. Tax law, you'll find that you can deduct your contributions to the church or to the temple or to the mosque so long, and this is what it says in the code, as you don't receive anything of value. Now, when I read that, I was a little offended, and I was kind of hoping that everybody would just decline the deduction because what you receive is of so much value in your life. But this is the kind of crazy nonsense that is involved in trying to draw these bright lines. Tax-exempt status means something. Were they to lose their tax-exempt status, their building would become taxable. Were we to lose our tax-exempt status, a couple of things would happen. One, you would no longer be able to deduct your contributions to this church. And for most of you, that probably wouldn't be horrifying. I mean, you know, it was, you know, somewhere, oh yeah, there it is, I got it, okay, good. For the average pledge, which is over $1,000, which is significant, still, the tax deduction is not going to be a huge part of most of your lives. Where it becomes a huge part of your life is we, if we lost our tax-exempt status, could not rent from the temple because a 501c3 can't rent to a profit-making organization and keep their tax-exempt status. If the temple spoke about politics, if Patrick Buchanan were running for president and the rabbi got up in the pulpit and said, Patrick Buchanan wouldn't be our first choice, despite what happened in Florida in 2000, they could lose their tax-exempt status, and this whole beautiful, wonderful plot of land could be turned into mixed-use condos and shops because there is no way that they could continue to pay what this land is worth on the tax rolls. These are significant consequences. Now, some people ask, why should we worry about this? Why isn't religion getting a free ride from the government because they are tax exempt? Isn't that number one, social engineering, encouraging activities that you want to encourage, like museums or concert halls or churches, temples, and mosques? That's not what the tax exempt proposition is about in principle. It is because our founders, and here I am an arch conservative, I'm hoping to save our tax exempt status this way, and now I am an arch conservative, a fundamentalistic believer in the original tent of our blessed founders, that the government does not have a legitimate role in religion. And that the power to tax, and that's what the American Revolution was largely about, is the power to destroy. If you remember in the 1960s, when the Nation of Islam was establishing various mosques, they were denied the religious exemption. Muhammad Ali was denied a draft deferment as clergy because the government decided, well, they're not a real religion. This is a very dangerous role for government to get into. What is a real religion? What is political? These are difficult questions with which to wrestle, and possibly at the extremes we can say, you know, if you go home and just say you're the first church of Fred, you don't get to deduct you know, all of your expenses. But there is a wide, fuzzy line that the government has no business interfering with. In Transylvania and Romania, under Ceausescu, I couldn't be giving the sermon. I couldn't be giving the sermon because every word was not written out, delivered to the office of sermon clearance, and okayed, and then read word for word. I think we all have the instinctual reaction that's an absurdity. That is an infringement on freedom of religion. The government should not be in the business of vetting sermons, whether they're pro-government or anti-government. That the point to these religious exemptions was not so much to boost religion as it was to build a wall around religious institutions so that unpopular positions could not be taxed out of existence. And that is exactly what is at stake. These issues get confused all of the time. Religious people get up and try to influence government. Government people speak in the name of religion. The Office of Faith-Based Initiatives in the Bush administration, many of you will read about the new book that is out on a lot of the hypocrisy of that office and how they would regularly look at grant proposals and get rid of them if the grant proposals weren't coming from the right religions. That's not okay. The separation of church and state is not about the church not speaking its truth to power. It is about the state not meddling in the spiritual and religious lives of the congregations in the nation. The government gets on the wrong side of this argument all of the time. There are people in government who are basing their legislative proposals not simply on what their own personal instincts and or morality might be, but they are basing it upon holy, sacred texts, which means that they don't have to say, I'm against stem cell research. They say, well, the chain of life, as I understand it from the Bible, says we must be against it. That is the government's misuse of religion as far as I'm concerned. When the government tells me, not for religious reasons, there was a nod in there I want you to ignore. When the government tells me for religious reasons, their religious reasons, as they understand it from the passages that they pick and select as opposed to the passages that they don't, that I could be arrested for performing a same-sex union, they are transgressing the line, not I. Two Unitarian Universalist ministers were arrested in New York for performing a same-sex union because the government said they couldn't do it. That's backwards. That's absolutely backwards. Our religious rights, R-I-T-E-S, are our business. Government can decide whether or not you get marital deductions and the other various forms of partnership and inheritance, and we can witness for ourselves on that. But in terms of sacraments, who in the world are they to talk about what is sacramentally permitted within churches and synagogues and mosques or any other ways that we meet and gather? When I performed my first same-sex union in 1971, there was a little local press, but it wasn't a big enough movement that anyone felt threatened enough to prosecute me. But it was against the law. That's just nuts. feel as you will about the issues that you feel deeply about. Rationalize it for yourself or for ourselves by those things that we hold to be sacred. But when things get legislated, when things get promulgated in the name of government, let it be in government's name. Do not let it be in God's name. Do not let it be in the name of the Torah or of the Gospels or of the Quran or any of those other books of legislation. Let religion speak its truths, its uncomfortable truths, its truths that I may not agree with, free from the fear and the terror of being driven out of business by the government when it just feels like there's been a transgression. Government uses religion all of the time. Candidates show up in pulpits all of the time. The great prophets of all of our sacred traditions spoke to the essential conditions of the human being and how we are to be together, how we are to grow together, how we are to nourish and care for each other, and that has consequences. How in the world would we ever deal with, I don't want to get into a Lenny Bruce routine here, it would be clean in any case, but if Moses and Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha showed up and wanted to come up here and use the microphone, we'd say, we're sorry, but could you please say something bland and ineffectual and nothing that has anything to do with war, with peace, with how we live together, with what our responsibilities are to the poor, to the downtrodden, what our reaction is to the powerful. Jesus, you know that thing about if you have two cloaks, give one to the poor? Sounds a little commie to me. Would you mind leaving that out the next time? And we can go through all of the prophetic traditions and just blue pencil out anything that might actually have some relevance to how we lead our lives. This would be the ultimate marginalization of every religion. It would make us all bland and safe and tax deductible forever and ever, world without end, hallelujah. And you could, in good conscience, take your deduction because you would have known that you received nothing of value. It would be a tragedy.